Oh, hello, everyone. It's time once again for another AEW Dynamite review here on the Mr. Warren Hayes Show podcast. Hello, I'm Mr. Warren Hayes. Hi, how you doing? It's Thursday. Happy Thursday. Thursday, April 11. We're going to be talking, of course, about the April 10 Dynamite. Look, first of all, apologies for missing out on last week's Dynamite review. Wasn't feeling great. I got to be careful with this ticker now moving forward. I have to be very self-aware of how I'm feeling and so on and so forth. I'm still, you know, getting back into the swing of things, into normality. So I apologize for missing out last week, but let me tell you, the wild horses could not have kept me away from this week's review. Should we just go right? We'll go right for it, right? We'll just start and go right into the footage. Like, there's no really, there's no other place to start. I think this is obviously the point of conversation. And this is, you know, there's a fair chance that this is why you're here. By the way, hello to anyone who's watching this for the first time. A bunch of new subscribers popped in recently, so welcome. Hope you enjoy this. This is a little sidebar from the usual Mr. Warren Hayes Show podcast. But what a sidebar it is this week. You know, it's as far as sidebar goes, it's sort of turning into the main page content. this is so... Look, on Saturday on Collision, the Bucks promised that they were going to air the all-in footage. I did a little video on this a couple of days ago, so, you know, I don't have to rehash everything. It's right there if you want to go watch my preliminary feelings and sort of like where, you know, whatnot. Every credible media member, journalist, whatever you want to call them, every credible person of that ilk under the sun basically said, this is not a rib, right? This is not a joke. This is not the Young Bucks, you know, doing the ha-has like the Young Bucks are wont to do. It's not a setup. It's the real deal. They are actually planning on showing the footage. So we did. And I got excited. for this footage to air, because any of you who have been listening to me for a substantial amount of time, or a short amount of time, you know that I am here for the chaos. I keep saying it over and over, one of the greatest things that exists in 2024, or at least in our modern age with two professional wrestling companies, is that you can get this kind of unbridled chaos, either with people jumping promotions or taking shots at each other. And this is the kind of thing that I legitimately missed, and makes enjoying pro wrestling for me. And I'm talking exclusively for me. And this isn't a true to form criticism. I'm expressing an opinion here. The status quo of one major league professional wrestling company doing their thing is boring. It's tedious. And this kind of stuff, when you have two promotions jockeying for position, trying to take, trying to grab mind share for each other over the others, that's cool. That's fun. I'm here for the chaos. So, of course, I'm excited for this. They're talking about airing the footage, so I'm like, here we go. And like I mentioned, you know, they probably had something juicy, something good to show, right? If you want the full setup to this. But I also was very wary at the same time. It was a double-edged sword. And it turns out the sword here was just one edge. And, you know, not the edge I don't think AEW wanted it to be. But the story here, if you haven't seen the footage, because you won't be able to find it on the internet anymore. Anyone who was posting the video on Twitter, on YouTube, was all being struck down, all being DMCA'd by AEW, which they've done in the past. it's not a first thing, but you know, they're basically trying to scrub it out of existence. And they posted this morning, as I'm recording this, before I recorded this, they posted the video of the Bucks angle, right, where they're sitting in front of the tape machine, and they're setting up the whole thing. They posted that video, but cut out the footage. So either they don't want it circulating, or they realized that it was a bad idea, or a little bit of both, which is also a thing. So in case you didn't see it, let me give you the bullet points here. We see it's grainy CCTV footage of over at Wembley, and there's a pretty good shot of Jack Perry, who's standing there, and you have Samoa Joe off to the left. There's a couple of guys around, some people with their faces blurred. And in the footage here, CM Punk walks up to Perry. He seems confrontational, okay? They talk to each other. We don't see Punk's face because he is legitimately, his back is turned to the camera. But Perry seems very calm. He's playing with his hair, you know. He doesn't seem to be, instigating anything, right? Of course, we don't have the audio. This is, you know, it's all silent. But then all of a sudden, like very suddenly, Punk shoves Perry, then slips around him and locks him in the choke. Like Punk said on Ariel Helwani, choked him just a little bit. That's when Jerry Lynn and Samoa Joe run in to break this off. There's Chris Hero, who's there as well, who's involved. Samoa Joe pulls Jack Perry off. Punk storms off. He flips some equipment towards someone who is off screen behind the wall. We are all assuming at this point this is Tony Khan, and that's pretty much it. I mean, Punk seemed to sucker punch Jack Perry as Joe was dragging Perry away. But other than that, you know, Sanjay Dutt runs in, you know, who's involved. Malachi Black and Hook sort of wander in on this. Like, ultimately speaking, CM Punk's recollection is pretty right, aside from a few embellishments, shock and awe. There's a few things that he added here that aren't exactly spot on true, but again, so minimal in scope that it's not even that big a deal. Like when he being Punk, when he was recounting this to Ariel Helwani on the interview at the MMA Hour, he said, you know, that he seemed like he was acting very calmly, right? Saying that Perry got up into his face, you know, and this was even something that was reported originally after the effect. That's what the outlets were running. Fightful Select even reported that, you know, they said that. They even reported that Jack Perry got up in his space and like bumped him to him, you know, and that's why Punk retaliated, right? But, you know, Punk shot first. Let's be honest. This is what happened. There's no other way to go about it. And, he also never mentioned, you know, he said that he called TK a clown or whatever, but he didn't mention that he was throwing shit at him, or tossing shit at him, whatever you want to call the action that he did at the end there. And, Perry didn't seem confrontational at all, seemed calm. And calm, and after it happened, seemed a little shocked at what just happened, right? So, you know, ultimately, I look at this, you know, I rewatched it a couple of times because they, AEW can't scrub it off my DVR. Rewatched it a couple of times. And, you know, the Punk ended up sort of looking like a jerk, right? But unsurprising, like, I'm not even saying this as, oh, what a shock here. You know, it's like, of course he's ending up looking like a jerk. It's CM Punk. It does, like, there's nothing here that changes here. And I think that ultimately it's not going to sway any opinions either. I don't think CM Punk fans are suddenly going to turn on him. Like, I would assume CM Punk fans are looking at this and they're going, oh, well, he was in the right. You know, they'll find some reason for him to have attacked first, but it doesn't even matter. You know, like, ultimately what this was, what I saw was a wrestling fight. You know, the kind that happened in locker rooms more frequently than you would like to think. And probably happens quite a bit with Phil Brooks, because this is what Phil Brooks does, right? This is par for the course. This is just good old fashioned Phil, ultimately. So there's nothing here that turns the tides, that sways opinion, that you're like, oh my God, you know. I don't know, if he had started picking up shit and started wailing on Jack Perry or something, you're like, holy shit, okay, this is unhinged. But it's just a dumb fight with, you know, meathead wrestlers, and that's all it is. I don't know what to say. I was excited to see it. I was excited when I watched it. But then as I rewatched it a couple of times, I was like, wait, this isn't as thrilling as this isn't as thrilling as I thought it was, or as it should be, or as, you know what I mean? But there's takeaways. There's things we need to that we can break down here. As opposed to just, because there's a lot of people who are extremely dismissive of it and just like, well, what was this all about? Well, you know, there's repercussions to this. Look, let's go. Let's break this down a little more. First of all, Jack Perry, from what I saw here, was absolutely scapegoated. Like, absolutely 100%. He, you know, his whole gimmick in New Japan, for those of you who maybe aren't paying attention, he's, you know, he's working in New Japan under his quote-unquote suspension. You know, he calls himself the scapegoat, and he tore up his AEW contract a few months ago, and he said, you know, they wanted a scapegoat, you know, they weren't listening to me even when I wanted to get released, you know, I took the blame for something. He's right. Like, there's nothing here that points to that you can see. We can't hear, again. Like, I don't know if he said, he said something about CM Punk's mama or something that would trigger him to that effect. You know, but there's nothing here that leads us to believe that Jack Perry was in the wrong here. You know what I like? I want to make sure we get this right. Sure, he went out and did the line, you know, that the Crimea, the real glass Crimea River line that CM Punk took umbrage to, you know, saying, you know, why are you doing, like you said on Helwani, why are you doing dumb internet shit? The coming from CM Punk is so fucking rich, but you know, nonetheless, that, you know, why are you doing this stuff? And clearly Punk had a problem with it, as opposed to Jack was like, well, it's fine. And, you know, I'm just, look, brother, take it easy. So maybe he was a bit of an agent provocateur here. I can get with. But in this situation here, he just got shoved. He got choked. They had to split him apart, and he didn't try like to break out of Samoa Joe's grip and go back and try to get at Punk. He was like, you could tell he was visibly shook about what happened. So he gets in trouble because of Punk's actions. They do officially suspend him, right? We talked about this a couple of weeks ago right here on the channel in a special video where I was talking about Jack Perry's suspension. There was a real suspension, but he is no longer suspended. He hasn't been suspended for, I'm sure, a couple of months at this point. So, you know, I believe, you know, especially with the little bits and bobs that I pick up here and there, and I believe Tony Khan was legitimately upset at Jack Perry for being the catalyst, not the instigator, but the catalyst of forcing TK to fire CM Punk because TK loved CM Punk so much because he got along great with them. They have very similar tastes when it comes to pro wrestling and how things should be handled in pro wrestling and so on and so forth. So, and of course, just the idea of TK being the guy that brought CM Punk back to wrestling, that was something that was unquestionably very near and dear to him. Probably, you know, inflated his ego a little bit. And I'm not saying this in a bad way. It would have inflated the ego of anyone who managed to bring CM Punk back to pro wrestling. You know what I mean? Like, you know, patting yourself on the back going, I'm the guy who brought him back. Yeah. You know, so I can understand, and there was probably lots of money involved in negotiations and business. Look, they, you know, they created Collision all around CM Punk and, you know, for a bunch of reasons, of course, but still, like, this was all part of the business plan, not just the creative plan, but the business plan as well. I can understand TK being sore at Jack Perry, and he probably, he being Tony Khan, probably reacted this way, which wasn't necessarily the best reaction, was maybe not necessarily the best way to go about it, especially when you see that Jack Perry did jack shit. You know? So he's absolutely a scapegoat, right? And if they, look, if they're going to use this for his return to AEW, that's tremendous. You know, I think he's, there's no better heel than a heel who's right. I've said this multiple times. I know there's a lot of, I've seen discussions about, oh, well, no, he's a babyface now. Is it? No. He's a heel, but a heel who's right. And I don't necessarily see it that way, you know? So that's one thing. The second thing I think we need to talk about is that this was not a good idea. It just was not a good idea. Who, you know, I was very much on the fence about this a couple of days ago when I made the video about this specifically, wondering how AEW fans would react and so on. Well, now we saw it, and you know, and ultimately we're left with these questions: like, who was this for? What did this accomplish? A lot of us were assuming that Tony Khan had the goods, right? That we were like, that this was going to be a thing. But is this just, was this just a ratings ploy? Because, or was this really just TK trying to settle a vendetta? Because in a vacuum, remove all the context. No. Remove everything that any speculation you might have about the motivations for Tony Khan to do this. This was an L. There's no way to go about it. This was not a good decision. I think marginally, the one person who stands to benefit from this is Jack Perry if he comes back as a heel persona and joins the new elite. You know? You know, TK, I believe, just got mad. Got gotten to, wanted to air the footage. And like I spoke about previously, I keep going back to the video I did to a couple of days ago, but it still stands true. I maintain that to a degree, I understand the desire to want to do this, to try and take control a little more of the situation, of the public relations sphere of this, which has been completely out of your hands forever, while CM Punk has been, and his acolytes, but mostly CM Punk, has been talking to wrestling media, you know, leaking things behind the scenes about what happened, about Brawl Out and All In, leading up to this, and then does the Ariel Helwani thing. But then even on top of that, like, aside from CM Punk talking and doing the interview with Helwani, where he's trashing the company, he's trashing you as a boss, as you're questioning your competency, there's also the whole pack of people who constantly nitpick and pull apart and over scrutinize AEW as well. And at some point, that's got to be exhausting for TK. Put yourself in his shoes for a second. At some point, it's got to be exhausting, where there's an entire like subgenre of video of wrestling content being done out there, which is essentially let's tear apart AEW. You know, Eric Bischoff with his wise decisions, wise choices, whatever the fuck it's called. Jim Cornette, the Brit sheets are also very weird in that regard as well. There's this whole contingent of people whose business is built upon tearing this apart. And at some point, it's got to be exhausting to just be on the receiving end of that noise all the time. On the flip side, you can also do the reasonable thing and, you know, delete the Twitter app from your phone. You know what I mean? Like, there's reasonable ways to cut down on this noise as well, you know, but TK won't do that because he's a poster and he's supposed to be able to handle it and should be handling it better than this, because this really does come off as a gut reaction to the Helwani interview last week, like a straw that broke the camel's back situation. That was one too much, a step too far. And he was like, okay, that's it. We got to fire back. We've been silent about it. We tried to take, you know, the high road. We tried to stay outside of throwing gasoline onto this dumpster fire. But here I can't take it anymore. We have to fight back. I can understand the motivations. Now, like I often also like to say, just because I understand something doesn't mean I like it, okay? Doesn't mean that I agree with it either. I can understand something, but then come around and tell you, it's like, yeah, that's still not a good idea. You know, I can understand, you know, the guy at the other end of the bar being mad at something and then taking a swing at a guy because he needs some kind of taking a swing at a random guy just because he needs some kind of because it, you know, his week has been so shitty, he just needs to evacuate all of these pent up frustrations. I can understand why he did it. I can also tell you that it's a bad idea and you shouldn't do it. You know, it's like, nonetheless, he should not have done it. The guy at the bar. I don't think this is, but coming back, of course, to TK here and the airing of the footage, I don't think this was the way to do it. I don't think it's not swaying CM Punk fans. There's not a single CM Punk fan out there that I am convinced. Maybe one. Fear the sweeping statements, Warren. There probably isn't many CM Punk fans who have been, if they're that have been swayed by this to go to, you know, to tear up their Best in the World t-shirts and tear down their posters and throw their action figures in the bin. I'm pretty sure if you're a dye-in-the-wool CM Punk fan, nothing's changed. You're like, what is this shit, you know? It's not swaying AEW haters either. You know, Eric Bischoff is not going to go on his Wise Choices pay-per-view, Jesus Christ, podcast, and say, you know, oh, well, I have a change of heart, you know? Even if the footage, because you can rest assured that even if the footage had been solid and good and shocking and something that we'd be sitting here today debating, saying, well, CM Punk should not have acted this way because this was over the line, this crossed the line or whatever, Eric Bischoff would still find a way to turn it and say, no, this was actually bad. You know, AEW should not have done this, whatever. So it's not swaying the haters, the Twitter accounts dedicated to posting bullshit. They're still going to keep doing it. And they actually have more fodder. They have a little more. They wake up this morning and they have a little more material to sink their teeth into. So there's no PR battle that's been won here. This fired shot is absolutely backfired on AEW. You know, and I would even say that AEW fans, dyed-in-the-wool AEW fans, are not excited by this. I don't think they like it. I don't think they're excited about this prospect. I don't know. Like, it didn't even provide the chaos that I wanted. It was just malarkey. It was just a big pile of hooey. A wet noodle. This was a wrestling fight. That's all there was to it. It was just a wrestling fight. And it didn't show off anything. You know, if anything, like I said, it showed that CM Punk was accurate with the broad strokes of the event, left out a few details, but nothing substantial enough to dig down in, to dig your heels in and say, what a goddamn liar, look at this. This is, you know, none of that. Now, I like the segment that this created, okay? I thought this was a very good segment. I liked that the Bucks, and I know, I feel I might be a little alone here. There's a couple of other people, but, you know, I liked the segment. I feel like it was well built up. You know, the Bucks said, you know, in their build up to this, it was a petty scrap, you know, and what it ended up doing, this is how they're tying it in, is that it took away their attention from their match with FTR later on in the evening, and that's why they lost. So they're blaming FTR's friend for what happened, and then FTR. So yeah, and I agree, it's a bit of a stretch. It's where, you know, the elastic's about to snap on this one, folks. You know, rein it back in a little bit. But FTR had a good promo afterwards, setting themselves up as, you know, the good guys, the AEW guys, the company guys, that, you know, and they asked the questions like, why are we doing this? Why are we showing this? Can't we just move on? Which was the feeling that a lot of us were having at this point when we saw the video, you know, and we were all Chris Hero sort of burying our face in our hands. And we just wanted stuff to move on. But we were like, yeah, hell yeah, Dax. Hell yeah, Cash. We're on your side here. I liked what this accomplished. And we'll talk about the segment, the whole, how it all tied together. I ultimately think this was very effective and ultimately got me a little more excited for the Bucks and FTR at Dynasty. To me, it worked. And it sets up Perry coming back, joining the Elite. I thought that was effective. I thought it was good. But I think people will have overall trouble parsing their feelings about this because the segment was so, the showing of the footage was so, was a bad decision, and the entire thing was so very frustrating and a little exhausting at the same time. You know, but listen, for the love of God, this is how I will end this over-analysis of some very poor video. For the love of God, move on. AEW, Tony Khan. I can feel the fatigue from the fan base. Actually, I can see the fatigue from the AEW fan base. People are just exhausted about all of the, people are just exhausted from all of these shenanigans that have been happening, right? The haters are going to latch on to this, regardless of what happens. They're always going to bring this up. Oh, AEW did 80,000 in Wembley again this year. Yeah, but the footage. What a bunch of dopes. This is going to be a rallying point. I really hope that there's a moratorium on Brawl Out, on All In. This has been so exhausting. This has been going on in one shape or form since 2022, folks. In one way or another, all the way back to Punk's feud with Hangman Adam Page. Do you realize how fucking exhausting all of this is? And towards the end of 2023, I thought AEW was putting the kibosh on it and was like, look, that's it, we're done. Because the company made a concerted effort at the end of 2023 and the start of 2024 to restore the feeling, right? To wash away whatever was left of the dark cloud that permeated the company, just rinse it all away, scrub it all the way down to the bone, bleach them bones white. Whatever was left, they wanted to get rid of it, but we're still here. We're still here, clasped onto a period in AEW history, which, was detrimental to them from a public relations standpoint, ended up being bad for them from a business standpoint, and which was legitimately exhausting for fans. Now, yeah, I think I have a higher endurance tolerance to this kind of bullshit than a lot of people did, because I look at this, I look at the stuff that happened, and I'm like, yeah, I'm kind of like Tony Schiavone when they cut back from the footage. I'm kind of like Tony where I have flashbacks, I get shivers up and down my spine, I have sensations of deja vu. I'm kind of like that. But of course, I don't have, I don't have a pony in this race, honestly. Like, whatever AEW decides to do with their stuff, it doesn't really affect me personally. So I don't mind talking about it. I don't mind making a thing about it. This stuff has to be covered regardless. And I don't mind covering it to a degree. I find it exciting. But I can understand how the general fan base could be exhausted with this, because they're like, let's just move on. CM Punk is gone. He was just an awful presence in the company towards the end. Where are the people that I used to cheer for? Where is Kenny Omega? Where is Hangman Adam Page? Where is Britt Baker? Where are all these people that got me into this company in the first place? Why are we latching on so hard to the spirit of CM Punk? The darkness of CM Punk. Why are we hanging on to this? We need to move on. I also know, and I said this specifically again in my video that I did a couple of days ago. I probably put a card here on the video for you to watch it if you're watching this on YouTube. You have to come watch this on YouTube if you're listening to this on your podcast app. I said it a couple of days ago Wrestling fans are not going to move on from this because wrestling fans don't. We're still talking about the Montreal Screwjob. We're still talking about the Pontiac Silver Dome attendance. You know, like this is the kind of shit that we latch onto and will never be let go. But if it's Among Us fans, you know, pestering people about it and asking Dave Meltzer his, you know, his, you know, every other day, you know, well, was the Montreal Screwjob work? Well, what happened at Brawl Out? You know, okay, that's one thing, but for the companies themselves to keep referring to them over and over and over again, that's where it gets exhausting. That's where the companies have at least to move on. Let the weirdo fans latch on to their conspiracy theories and pestering, like I said, Dave Meltzer as we keep moving forward. That's fine. That's par for the course. That's what a fan base does. What are you going to do? You can't control everyone. But the companies have to move on. It behooves Tony Khan to move on. And I hope he does. And I hope this is the last that we hear of this for a long, on AEW TV, for a long, long time. Hopefully, whoever were involved in this decision-making got a pretty cold damn shower with the response that they got, particularly from me. We should review a show. April 10, 2024, from the Charleston Coliseum in Charleston, West Virginia. No Hangman Adam Page. I was a little surprised here, but hey, 2,971 tickets distributed. That's not good. I mean, yeah, there's no half measures here. This wasn't great. The last time Dynamite was here was in 2022. When I say here, in Charleston, not here in, you know, in the studio, which, you know, is actually an office, and I call it studio to make me sound more important. 4,168 is the number of tickets distributed on August 17, 2022, which was the last time Dynamite was there, according to WrestleTix, of course. That's a significant drop. That's a huge, huge drop. You know, couldn't even break 3,000. I mean, maybe WrestleTix will have a final update where maybe we'll have inched closer to 3,000. It's hard to say. So the show starts off with Samoa Joe coming out for his match against Dustin Rhodes, his his championship eliminator match. But he gets attacked by Swerve Strickland at the top of the ramp, completely blindsided. They fight off the stage, and Swerve puts him through a table, which incapacitates Joe. They have the medical team come out to check on him. And this is the through line for the show where we're wondering on the medical situation of Samoa Joe. Will he be able to compete? Will he be able to make the match, essentially, with Dustin Rhodes? You know, in Japan, they would have stripped you from the belt. They would have stripped you of the belt. I don't know if we're going that hard here, but nonetheless. That instead leads us to our real opening match, which was for the AEW TNT title, where Adam Copeland defeated Penta El Zero Miedo to retain the title. I thought this was a lot of fun. Copeland is pulling out lucha moves here. He's doing stalling head scissors. And I'm, whoa, like I haven't seen him do that kind of shit in eons. I thought he had his working boots on here. Backstabber by Penta, power slam on the apron by Adam Copeland, which popped me. I was like, Jesus, okay. Avalanche code red by Penta, which was tremendous. And the match ends when Copeland catches Penta off a springboard with a spear for the win. Penta was firmly in control. This was a desperate, a last-ditch move with the finisher to get the job done. Hey, I think I've mentioned it, but I want to be really clear. I'm enjoying Adam Copeland in AEW, and I'm surprised. I really am surprised because Copeland's last stints in WWE bored me to tears. I thought he was phoning it in. I thought it was dull. I thought his promos were insufferably obnoxious and long and dull, and his work just wasn't doing it. Doing a Hell in a Cell where they have to, you know the drill, the Randy Orton greatest wrestling match ever, and all this bullshit, you know. And you know, I am on record here, on this podcast, on these reviews, and on the main podcast as well. Subscribe if you don't want to miss anything. I'm on record telling everyone that I'm a little skeptical. A lot of people were very excited about Edge in AEW. And I was like, I'm holding it at arm's length because I'm not sure what he's... But this guy here has successfully understood the environment he's in. This is probably making him feel real good to be able to wrestle a little unchained, you know, released from the constraints of WWE and what you can and cannot do and how produced the matches are and so on and so forth. He probably feels a little more freedom. I think it shows. It shows that he has a spark. It shows in his work. Working with Penta last night, they didn't decide to go ahead and do a house show match. Copeland was like, look, I got to do some lucha shit here. I got to get a little airborne here, which, I haven't done in like 15 years or so. I'm enjoying his run. I think it works. He understands the environment he's in. He's adapted and he's making the most of it. Like he's really biting down on it and making sure that he shines in this new experience that he's in. He's not just being a WWE guy in AEW. It's like, no, this is what I have to do. And of course, like he's got a lot of his contemporaries there as well. You know, he's got Mox there that probably he could talk to about, well, what do I have to do here? Danielson. Of course, he's working with Christian, and Christian is a perfect example of someone who has pivoted and adapted and just looks tremendous, right? So of course, he's got all of his contemporaries at his fingertips giving him some tips. They're probably talking stuff over. And he's assimilated. He's not trying to impose himself. He's trying to adapt. And I think it's tremendous. Look, there are people out there right now in New Japan Pro Wrestling, some other contemporary of Adam Copeland, who could benefit from that type of self-awareness or clairvoyance. Because they haven't shown that they're able to adapt to their new surroundings, right? I'm looking at you, Nick Nemeth. But I'm making a point of it because I want to come full circle to a previous criticism that I had, and I want to tell you, I'm as surprised as you are, if you're surprised at all. But I'm as surprised as you are that I'm enjoying Adam Copeland as much, because I had no use for him in his last stints in WWE. No use. Absolutely none. Creatively, it's great. After the match, Julia Hart appears, which allows Brody King to attack Adam Copeland from behind. And then Willow Nightingale comes in for the save. She gets partially misted. She nonetheless attacks Julia. Then Brody goes to... He stops beating down on Copeland to save Julia. And then Copeland wakes up and, you know, tosses him to the floor. And the baby faces stand tall in this one. This is all, of course, setting up the trios match. We'll talk about it in a second. Fine little segment. Good match. Probably the match of the night. And look, I gave it 3.75 stars. So, short of really great, But absolutely worth the time. I thought it was a blast. I thought it was a lot of fun. So there you go. Next up, we had Renee Paquette, who's backstage with Chris Jericho, Hook, and Katsuyori Shibata. Jericho is turning heel. It started last week. We're going full on with it this week, where he's, you know, you're under my learning tree. Okay, you brought in Shibata, and that's fine, but this is my strategy. So he lays out, Chris Jericho does, a strategy that he expects both Hook and Shibata to adhere to. And there, so there you go. And Shibata still does the gimmick with the auto translator, which oddly is delightful. Like, this is a gimmick that they won't be able to stretch out for months, you know, if they use it too often. But they have been using it sparingly, and, you know, the little compliment to Renee's necklace. You know, it's very funny, because the thing with Shibata that everyone, like, is, you know, what's his gimmick? What's his personality? His personality is just what is his character? Well, he's just a guy who beats people up. Oh, that's kind of boring, you know. So, you know, and Ren Narita tried to be, you know, a facsimile of Shibata over in New Japan, and he ended up being boring, and everyone was like, well, what's his personality? So it's funny to me that Katsuyori Shibata is, you know, involved in something that requires a sense of humor. Not that he, you know, we don't know how he is backstage, but everything you hear about him, like, you know, like, he's this, you know, he's very serious, very intense about what he does, a stone cold trainer, you know. It breaks character. I think it's, you know, it's a fun little bit. They use it sparingly. Of course, if we did it all every week and whatnot, it'd get really exhausting really fast, but this was pretty fun. Then we get Eddie Kingston and Mark Briscoe, who are backstage with Renee Paquette. Mark Briscoe talks about winning the title off of Kingston. He's in pain, but he's ready to do his match this weekend against the House of Black with Eddie and Copeland. Kingston says, "Yeah, I'm beat up too, but this is pro wrestling." Adam Copeland arrives and he says, "You know, he loves them and." He wants to make sure that everyone is still good for Dynasty. Everyone gives a thumbs up. Then Willow arrives with Stokely. And she says, basically says, why don't we have a warm-up match next week? You know, you guys are fighting House of Black, me too. Why don't we have Adam Copeland and Willow Nightingale versus, I guess, Brody and Julia? And Cope was like, yeah, that's a good idea. So we're getting a mixed tag last week, and Stokely is in on it, and he apologizes to Eddie for calling him, for saying that he smells like Burger King and Burger King in Newports. which is still the fun. And the segment sort of ended a bit on chaos, you know, with the camera sort of swerving around and, you know, Copeland seemingly trying to still say stuff. I liked how this sort of finished. It finished in a bit of chaos. Again, I liked the chaos. That was fun. And then we get the Buck segment. We're not going to rehash all of this. We talked about it. We talked about the promo. You know, basically, FTR made, you know, it was a very rah-rah promo. Not unlike what Adam Copeland did last week. And again, you know, very weird that we're doing this the week after Adam Copeland got to the ring and say, positivity, let's move forward. It's all very weird. But it's a good promo that FTR did. I think everyone just had the air sucked out of them and it was hard to get into. But, you know, they said, this is about AEW. This is about pro wrestling. You know, so not about Wembley, not about All Out. This is about the future. There you go. But, you know, we still have a bit of this angle to talk about. So we'll get to that. Renee Paquette invites Will Ospreay to the stage. You know, they did this last week. A new way of doing their promos. Just where they're at the top of the stage. You know, they used to do what WWE used to do this, right? You were back in the old days, They'd have a stage like set up on the arena floor, like a little riser or whatnot, and they'd conduct the interview from there. Gene Okerlund most of the time was doing this. I think they, you know, some of us have started calling it the Okerlund position. And they'd have Mean Gene there with a wrestler, and they'd be back to the audience, right? They just like right there, hanging out in the back. And I'm like, wow, this is good that they're doing this now. They're bringing this back. They don't have a little stage separately for that. They're doing it from the stage, but. You know what? It's good. I really like that angle. I really like the promo that they did last week with Willow. I thought it was a different feel, and you could feel the crowd get hype, and you know Willow would turn around to get the crowd into it, and it really worked. And then Ospreay again this week. That I think that was tremendous. I this is something that they should do more. When I talk about. Why did my voice crack? When I talk about AEW doing their own thing, you know, not copying everything that WWE does, this is the kind of thing that they should do that makes them, that's allows them to stand apart. Because WWE these days doesn't do this type of shot, you know. So do things that make you look and feel different is much better than trying to copy what the other guys do, because you will always end up looking like the facsimile, as opposed to the original, as the little bro, as opposed to the big bro who's been around for 40 years before you. You know, kind of thing. There's no way. Anyway. Ospreay comes out and nice little fiery promo. In this, of course, there was the shot that he took at Triple H, right? For those of you who don't know, during one of the pre-shows at WrestleMania this weekend, Triple H was talking and said something to the effect that when you come to work for WWE, you're here for the grind, you're here for the that's it, you're here for the grind. Let me see if I can find this. Okay, I got it. This is his quote. He says, if they are not here to be all in on this, when I see people coming out of trying to make it and then they pick a job where, well, they work less, the schedule is lighter, then I'm like, I'm glad I didn't pick you. If you're not in it for the grind at that point early in your career, you have no business being here. Okay, so that's... Everyone instantly assumed that he was talking about Will Ospreay, which I think is fair. I think that's exactly who he was talking about on this WrestleMania show, still talking about AEW talent. But digress Jones over here. So basically, Will responded to this, saying, you know, he's one of the guys traveling from the UK to the US every single week and delivering some of the best wrestling matches the world has ever seen. And the guy who said, people are afraid of the grind, only got there by grinding on the boss's daughter, which I thought was funny and something that's a little, unusual for Will Ospreay to say at the same time. You don't really hear him take overt shots like that, but I thought that was, funny. You know, the Triple H comment is very funny indeed, where it's like, hey, yeah, it's a weird pitch. It's a hell of a pitch. Where you're telling wrestlers, hey, yeah, sure, we'll pay you less, but you'll work more dates. And somehow this is perceived as a bad thing, you know? It's not as if Triple H is running a plucky startup, you know, where people are expected to... Look, I personally, in my lifetime, I've worked in two separate startups, okay? I've worked for two startups. And when you're in startup mode, yes, you know, it's like... That's the mentality. That's where you're in. You might be setting aside a larger paycheck, but you're doing something you love, something creative that you feel accomplished in, that you have the freedom to do what you want. And yes, the hours are long and irregular and stupid, but that's what you sign up for so that you can eventually reap the rewards when this actually takes off, kind of thing. So I understand I understand the grinding mentality in that on that end, but a WWE is like a major media company. It's a billion-dollar company. I think it's a hell of a pitch. A hell of a pitch to be there, you know, stone-faced, poker-faced is what I'm trying to say, telling people, you know, yeah, come here, but you got to be ready to grind. If you want to go elsewhere to make more money with less dates, well, you're not, you don't got what it takes. I think that's a hell of a pitch. We'll come work for WWE. You'll work more. We'll pay you less. Fucking hell of a pitch. Again, if this was a startup, I'd get it. But in their circumstance, nah, I don't buy that. I don't buy that in the least. Anyway, then he talks about Bryan Danielson. You know, we're still building to that match at Dynasty, saying he's faster and stronger than Danielson. He says younger, fresher men have tried to take him down and failed and so on. It's a good little short, fiery promo, but it was effective. Liked it. This leads us to Shane Taylor Productions, the Shane Taylor Productions team of Shane Taylor, Lee Moriarty, and Anthony Ogogo showing back up here on AEW television, defeating, for a match, I should say, defeated Chris Jericho, Hook, and Katsuyori Shibata. This was fine, nothing more. This is just fine. It's a story beat match. I'll tell you, I was excited to see Ogogo, see how, you know, what he's been doing, how's he been hanging since whenever the fuck was the last time we saw him, I don't know. But, you know, there wasn't much to really sink our teeth into. Is, you know, he didn't do much. Moriarty was doing most of the heavy lifting here on the heel side, as was Shibata for the babyfaces. You know, these are the two guys that worked the most in the match. And the story of the match here is that things didn't go to Jericho's to follow Jericho's layout, right? So however he ordered the match to go down, it didn't go that way. So he's being pissy about it. He keeps Hook from getting the hot tag to Katsuyori Shibata when Shibata was in peril. So, and then Shibata gets suckered by Shane Taylor and allows Lee Moriarty to get the win on Shibata. Hook and Chris Jericho are arguing. Hook basically tells him, fuck off, man. You're not wanted here. Jericho's upset and a little bemused. Heel Chris Jericho is really the best Chris Jericho. Like, whenever he gets to be, you know, slimy and just be disgusting and, you know, be like, this is where he shines. It's really the best version of Chris Jericho, where he's passive aggressive in his comments. He's trying to be nice, but he's also being a dick. This is really where he shines. So, I'm excited at the prospect of him no longer being this fucking Lionheart stuff. You know, it's like, can't we just move on? Like, can't we just, you know, I'm sick of this stuff. It didn't work. Renee Paquette is with Dustin Rhodes backstage, continuing the through line of the Samoa Joe situation. And Dustin says, "Well, you got to get done with grit, with passion and work ethic." Yes, Dad. Kazuchika Okada squashes Cristiano Argento. Not much to say there, except, you know, he does the air raid crash. You know, neck breaker thing Okada does. And his expression on his face, it reminded me of when he had to fight Kaito Kiyomiya last year in during the New Japan Noah crossover, where his face is all like, what the fuck am I doing? What is this? Who is this? What are we doing here? You know, it's more than this is too easy. It's more along the lines of, I'm above this. I should not be doing this. It's tremendous. So then he gets on the mic and accepts Pac's challenge to for Dynasty. So then Pac comes out, but the Young Bucks run him over and they throw him into the ring. There's CM Punk chants, by the way. Good. Well done, Tony Khan and the AEW Brain Trust. You done good. So CM Punk chants, but anyway, FTR come out. They get overwhelmed. Basically, all the baby faces are eating shit. Chair shot from Okada, which I think a lot of people feel like Pac took it on the head, but I think he took it on his shoulder. I think it looked like he ate it on the head, but the shoulder really took the brunt of it. And I think that's by design. I don't think that was a mistake. Not by Okada. And the heel stand tall in a great beatdown segment. I really like this. And this is what compounds everything for me. This is what makes not airing the footage forgivable, but palatable. What makes the footage acceptable to me, or at least this whole angle, is that it's led to this. It's fed this angle. It's fed this feud. I'm more excited for these matches, particularly for the Young Bucks and FTR. This is good. I think it's done its job. Let's never talk about it again, please. But for what it needed to do, I think it worked. And I think with retrospect, once the emotion is gone, once the visceral reaction everyone is gone, when we review this 5 years from now, you know, when we're doing our Dynamite recaps, you know, rewatches, I mean, and we get to this episode, I think we're going to sit back and we're going to be much more reasonable about it. We're going to look at this or kids after us are going to look back at this and say, man, the old heads back then, they had it all wrong. This was actually a very good angle. Cross my heart. I believe that. The Bong Bong Gong is backstage. The Bang Bang Gang. Bullet Club Gold is backstage. And it's basically Jay White saying that he wants a tune-up match for Dynasty. And he wants it this Friday on Rampage. And again, Jay White is just one of the most natural, excellent, top-tier, top-level promos in this business, in this company. He's just tremendous. I don't know why they don't push him to the moon, quite frankly. Then we got Renee Paquette. She's up on stage with a bottle of champagne and some champagne glasses. It's time for the Charleston Champagne Championship toast. I was going to say Charleston Champagne Championship. That's what I was going to say, but I corrected myself. But no one's going to notice it. No one's going to realize that I fucked up because I corrected myself before I did. See? Right? Uh-huh. I could edit it out, but I won't. I'm not going to edit that out. I'm proud of my work. Thunder Rosa comes out and with Toni Storm, and they pour some champagne and Toni Storm throws the champagne in Thunder Rosa's face, and then she attacks her nice and proper and wipes the face paint off of her. Deonna Purrazzo comes in to help things up, to help out. She gets cock blocked by Luther, and she tries to help up Thunder, but Thunder pushes her away, so there's a lot of tension there, and Deonna is like, all right. And yeah, that was the Charleston Champagne Championship toast. I don't know what to tell you. I mean, it's a little angle. It's fine. It's, a little something to add to the match here. And it's, to the match. And it's also advancing at the same time, this little burgeoning a feud that Thunder Rosa and Deonna Purrazzo have as well. So, I'm not complaining. It's fine. And then we had Mariah May defeating Anna Jay off the heels of the toast. Good little match. match here between the two. We're not talking Akira Hakuto here in any stretch of the imagination, but good little match. Anna looked good in this match. I thought she was very good. And boy, oh boy, Mariah May, she just strikes hard. She strikes harder than anyone else in the division. Maybe outside of Jamie Hayter, but we haven't seen Jamie Hayter in such a while. This is the stardom in her, right? This is her being, you know, thrown around and busted up by some little Japanese ladies. Boy, she can strike back. She has to roll up Anna Jay for the win. It's not like a decisive big time victory here. Good little match though. Mariah May just might be the breakout star of this division. Like, she can absolutely go down a Jamie Hayter path where her work is going to get her over more than anything else. She's tremendous. She looks better every week. After the match, Anna Jay locks her in the Queen Slayer, trying to get some heat back, but that's not going to work because Stardom's Mina Sharikawa arrives with Stardom logos everywhere. And I'm like, of all the nights to bring in Stardom, to have Stardom women appear on AEW Dynamite. I really do hope that the people who had been clamoring for Stardom women to cross the forbidden door and work in AEW and so on and so forth, I really hope that they lost their minds and got on Twitter and got really, really excited about it. Look, we heard about it, you know, you had the Stardom women at Ring of Honor. Now we have Mina, who is one of their top stars, Mina Sharikawa, who shows up on AEW to further an angle. Basically, you know, she's coming in here to drive a wedge between Mariah May and Toni Storm, because they used to be in a faction together. When I say they, I mean May and Sharikawa. I can never remember the name. Venus Flytrap Business Inc. I can never remember what the faction was called. But, you know, it was Mina. It was her, Mariah, and for a time there was Zaya Brookside in that as well. It has something to do with Venus. Venus Express. The Venus Space Express. That's what we're going to call it. The Venus Space Express. And she was, I'm legitimately drawing a blank. I'm sorry. I can't remember. I never remember. Like, I barely remember the names of all the factions in Stardom again. Like, I remember Odeo Tai, because Odeo Tai are, you know, they're all tremendous. All a bunch of jerks. And then there's Queen's Quest, but they're not as, and then there's Stars. Like, I know the factions, but isn't like, wasn't the Venus Space Express, wasn't that like a sub-faction of another faction? It was a faction within a faction? You know, like the War Dogs and Bullet Club kind of thing? What are we talking about? Yeah, so Sharikawa shows up, and look, no one in the audience knew who she was, okay? No one in the audience knew who she was. But I'm just hoping at this point, everyone who's been rattling the cages and hoping that, oh, we want Stardom women on AEW. We want Stardom women at Forbidden Door. It seems more and more likely that there will be women at Forbidden Door, which, by the way, is going to be in Long Island, I believe, on June 30th. They announced the dates this morning before I started recording this. So I believe this is all becoming a reality. So won't you all come in droves then? Come on. Like, this is it. This is what you've been waiting for. This is what you wanted. This is what people have been pestering Tony Khan for months. As Tony Khan once said, time to put your money where your fucking mouth is. Tune in and get excited for it. But again, what a fucking night to do this when the mood is low, the atmosphere is low. You know, Dave Meltzer this morning on Wrestling Observer Radio was saying that morale is low. Let's say, you know, morale backstage is low, you know, and of course morale is low after a show like last night. No one's going to go, yippee. It was a bad decision. It was a bad decision. And you're bringing Mina in on this one. She was probably backstage being like, what the fuck is going on here? Why is everyone... Catering is great, but look at all of these mopes. Everyone's moping. Anyway, they celebrate with some they being Mariah May and Mina Sharikawa. They celebrate with some champagne like they did at Ring of Honor last Friday. And they kiss, and not a little peck on the cheek. They full-on smooch. Boy, oh boy. Right then and there. There's a bunch of people who, commentary was took off guard, as was most of us. The thing is that they would do this quite a bit in Stardom. So it's not necessarily a new thing, but I think like for Western sensibilities, for people who weren't aware of the nature of this faction that they have, the Venus Space Express. I think it might have been a little shocking. A little, you know, ooh. Anyway. Fine little match, though. I thought, you know, Mariah May works hard. Anna Jay looked good. Again, that's not going to blow your mind. Is it a little blue? Three? A gentleman's three, I think I gave it. That is correct. The gentleman's three. And the main event was the AEW World Title Elimination match where Samoa Joe defeated Dustin Rhodes. Good, strong match. Dustin Rhodes gets busted open on this one because Joe is just pummeling the dude into oblivion. Dustin is just getting clobbered by Joe at this point. Dustin Rhodes does a crossroads to huge reactions in the crowd. Uranagi by Joe. Dustin thinks he's got he doesn't know how to put Joe away, and he doesn't know how to do it, and he's got the title in his hands, and he's like, maybe I should use it, maybe I should not, and he opts to not use it because, you know, he's a good man, but Joe doesn't give a shit. The ref is distracted with nonsense, and Joe uses the title, gets the win. You know, I think this was this was very good. I thought this was good. Good little match. You know, I'm not going to go too crazy on it. It was fine. It was a good match. Solid. Good pro wrestling. And I'm going to leave it at that on that end. The story that they were telling here seems to be causing some... Let me rephrase that. Let's start that over. The story they were trying to tell in this match, according to me, And I think this is what it was. It's not like, oh, Valiant Joe overcomes all the obstacles, you know, but he's a heel kind of thing. So it does. I think the story here is that even though Joe gets clobbered before the match, has to be checked out by medical, he will still find a way to win his match. If Joe had defeated Dustin Rhodes clean as a whistle, you know, despite the injury... Despite the injury early on and you know, being having to be cleared by medical to actually have the match, if that had happened and he defeated Dustin clean as a sheet, then it's like, okay, it's a come from behind, oh, he valiantly overcame all the obstacles to win, and that would have been a little weird. But here we absolutely have a heel champion who not only got the shit kicked out of him, but he was dominant enough to beat up Dustin, to bleed him, just clobber the shit out of him, and then just use the title to win. Couldn't necessarily put him away the old-fashioned way, but decided to cheat to win. What this tells me in regards to the rivalry with Strickland right now is that, one, Joe can struggle through any physical imperatives that he has. He's just he's just a tough son of a bitch. And second of all, he will do whatever it takes to win. And it doesn't matter to him if he wins clean or not. That's not who Samoa Joe is. Remember, he congratulated MJF on using cheap tactics to get the win. Said that's something I would have done. Remember, he did that. So this is all very consistent. I don't see any issues with this match. I don't see this suddenly as Samoa Joe having a babyface moment. This is Samoa Joe just being a beast and using shitheel tactics to get the win. To me, it's obvious. To me, it was obvious. I was like, oh, okay. But some people apparently are upset that he had a babyface style win. I don't know. That's not how I see it. Both of the babyfaces here are kind of, you know, violent and unforgiving regardless. Both he and Swerve, so. You know. They both will have recourse to these tactics. Swerve a little less. He's sort of, you know, I will amend that. Because Swerve did set aside using Nana's crown, right, to help him win a match that one time. You know, he wants to do things the right way now. But he's still not above cheap-shotting a guy before a match. But then again, he was cheap-shotted last week. So, you know, it all still makes sense. Like, Swerve is a nasty baby face, right? And he's got this nasty edge to him. Whereas Joe is just a fucking heel from one point to another, right? That's just how it goes. There you go. And that's how this review goes as well. That's how we're going to wrap up this review of AEW Dynamite. A Dynamite which I thought was overall not bad, not good, you know, some good stuff. I think the wrestling definitely was not there, despite the fact that I liked matches on it. And then I'm sitting here and saying, sure, this was good. And, you know, the opener was very good. I think overall it was very heavy on angles. you know, the specter of the footage will linger over this edition for a long time. But I also think that, you know, AEW can deliver more on matches than this. This was fine, don't get me wrong. And I think this was an overall not bad edition of Dynamite. Not all the way good. Definitely not bad, but, you know, just and not average either, because things were good here. I don't know. Not bad. And you're not bad for still being here at the very end of this review. Thank you very much for being here. If you're watching this on YouTube, subscribe, like the video. Honest to God, you have no idea how much that helps. So if you can, if you have the inclination to do it, that would be great. And some 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts. 5-star ratings on Spotify would also help out a great deal. Help grow the podcast over on those platforms. I will be back soon at the very latest next week for another edition of the Mr. Warren Hayes Show. Thank you very much for being here. And until then, well, I'll see you next time.